The top stories from the KCBS Radio Newsroom. This is the All Local.
We have a strike that may be over, a marathon negotiating session between the United Teachers of Richmond and the West Contra Costa Unified School District ended early this morning with a tentative agreement. KCBS's Matt Bigler is at El Cerrito High with the latest.
Early this morning, the school district and the teachers union reached a tentative agreement, which includes salary and health care increases. Details are still being released, but both sides landed on an 8% pay boost over 2 years. This is El Cerrito High School teacher Brett Buchanan.
So just happy to be back in the classroom and get things back to normal.
How long will it take to return things to where they should be?
Well, students should be back in class tomorrow. We have today to prepare for everything.
The tentative agreement must still be ratified by members of the United Teachers of Richmond and the school board. In a statement, the district says, quote, "We are relieved that the strike is over and our students and teachers will be reunited in the classrooms on Thursday." At El Cerrito High School, Matt Bigler, KCBS.
It's also a big day for Oakland Unified, where district officials are voting on a final plan to cut $100 million from next year's budget in order to avoid a state takeover, which would mean losing local decision-making. The district is operating more schools than enrollment dictates, but so far, none of the cost-cutting proposals include school closures, but they do suggest deep cuts at school sites. Meanwhile, at Menlo Park, the Sequoia Union High School District's school board meeting today to talk about whether to close Tidewater Academy due to declining enrollment. Same item, different price. That is what a new study from Consumer Reports and Groundwork Collaborative finds when it comes to comparing identical groceries bought at the same store through Instacart. As KCBS's David Welsh tells us, researchers say AI-driven price algorithms could be pushing some totals up by as much as 23%.
Elizabeth Pencotti with the Groundwork Collaborative says look no further than a Seattle Safeway and a box of Wheat Thins.
Our study, we had folks shop at the same Safeway at the same time.
They found Wheat Thins varied in price from one shopper to another, and she says the pattern wasn't isolated to just crackers.
What we could be looking at in just a couple of years is something that combines, you know, the data from you on your loyalty program at your grocery store, plus your facial recognition.
Adam Kovacovic, who runs a think tank representing many tech companies, including Instacart, says that scenario goes a bit too far. And he also points out that on Instacart, pricing is always up to the retailer.
And so it just depends on what the individual grocery store chooses as their pricing strategy.
As for Instacart, they say AI pricing is there to help the retailer. David Welch, KCBS.
Hopefully it won't be too foggy this weekend, but we will see, which sees the peak of the annual Geminide meteor shower. It is one of the most active events of the year when you could see up to 120 meteors an hour. Now, the best time is going to be after 11 p.m. Saturday night, but you could start seeing them as early as 9. Gerald McKeegan is adjunct astronomer at Oakland's Chabot Space and Science Center.
All you need to do is just sit down or lay down and just look up at the sky for a while. You don't want to look in any particular direction. You want to see as much of the sky as you can and just wait for those meteors to appear. You don't want to use binoculars or a telescope. You want to look with just your naked eye.
These inch-long particles are going 22 miles a second, producing long streaks that we call shooting stars. He says the cool thing about making a fuss about these meteor showers is that they tend to see more interest in astronomy and science after each one. Chabot is hosting a late-night watch party.
In the unlikely event that it's actually clouded over, we actually can show a meteor shower in our planetarium. So even if it's cloudy, we'll still be able to show something.
UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital is taking primary care on the road. KCBS's Shannon Golden took a tour of the hospital's new mobile care unit, which aims to expand access to care for families in the East Bay.
Come on in. Step up into the new mobile unit and you'll forget you're in a vehicle at all.
Everything that we have in the clinic, we have here.
Including two exam rooms, one that's wheelchair accessible, with a bathroom and a lab in between.
We'll be open for well child checks, vaccinations, acute checks if someone's sick.
Pediatrician Dr. Gina Lewis says the goal is to make that care more accessible for the hospital's 10,000 patients across its clinics.
About 10% of them live in Contra Costa County, and they have a really difficult time paying for gas or BART or bus or Uber, and it's it's difficult for them to come to see us. So for us to be able to go to them is great.
This roving clinic will travel all over the East Bay, she says, partnering with Head Start programs, schools, and local organizations to offer walk-up service. In Oakland, Shannon Golden, KCBS.
A San Francisco musician is getting a lot of attention about her upcoming lighthearted protest song and the inspired art that she's making. Here's KCBS's Ken Duffy.
There's a place where lovers go.
The song idea came to Olive P. Pants after she lost her job last year, racking up some $800 worth of parking tickets, having to enter a program to pay some of them off by cleaning city buses.
I was just like so upset, so I sat down in front of my piano and I was like, it just came out.
But she created a buzz on social media by asking for paid parking tickets to make the single's cover photo.
I just saw a mannequin for sale in Chinatown. I had a dress that I never wore, and I just started sewing tickets onto the dress.
And while she says she understands parking needs to be regulated, Olive P. Pants says the tickets shouldn't be so expensive.
Really ask yourself, before you give out your next ticket, who are you helping?
Ken Duffy, KCBS.
In a statement, the SFMTA says in part that parking enforcement is a necessary tool to keep streets clean and safe. Good news for expectant mothers in the Bay Area. More than a dozen hospitals have just been named among the best in the country when it comes to maternity care. Here's reporter Megan Goldsby with the latest rankings by U.S. News and World Report.
Alta Bates Medical Center, UCSF, and Kaiser San Jose are all on the list, along with Santa Clara Valley Medical Center, where James Byrne is the chair of obstetrics and gynecology for the health center.
We really have excellent physicians and nurses who really combine some of the best levels of care delivery in terms of resources and planning, and really also make that rich for the experience of the mothers.
He says although birth rates in California and the Bay Area are down, they've actually seen births increase year over year since 2020.
So I think it's just, again, indicative of the support to provide women with the care they deserve for the most basic element of human life, birth.
Megan Goldsby, KCBS.
How long do you wait to see your doctor? We've got a shortage. A new trend among medical students, though, could begin to reverse that. Nearly one in three U.S. medical students are now training to become doctors of osteopathic medicine. To tell us what that means for rural and underserved communities, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Robert Kane, president and CEO of the American Association of Colleges of Osteopathic Medicine. Doctor, thanks for the time.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Talk about, first of all, let's differentiate between, you know, a regular GP and osteopathic medicine.
So actually what we'll do is separate between the two degrees, and that'll let us walk into the type of physician you might see. So there are two medical degrees in the United States, Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine and Doctor of Medicine. They are equal from a standpoint of independent practice, having no restrictions on license in any of the states, both fully licensed to practice all aspects of medicine and surgery. What separates our particular approach to medicine, and you've mentioned what is a growing interest in terms of students, is the way we ultimately teach medicine in our medical schools. So the idea that students still must learn about anatomy and physiology and biochemistry and clinical care, but how we put those pieces together because of what we want at the end of medical school is important. So DO schools focus first and foremost, it's almost like doubling down on the point that the person in front of you is important. So that whole person care, mind, body, spirit, drives how we approach our patients. We also spend a lot of time trying to understand how the body's intrinsic healing mechanisms can be augmented through a variety of different forms of care, also using surgery, medications, and so forth to try to get the best patient outcomes. And finally, we spend additional time in the classroom learning about manipulation that we can apply to the musculoskeletal system of the body to try to treat certain conditions and, again, help us with our outcomes. So it is a approach to medicine that we think is very comprehensive and allows us to align to certain needs in the healthcare system. As a result of everything I described, We have a very high portion of our students who ultimately choose to go into primary care. That physician you're going to encounter first as you enter the healthcare system.
It sounds like a much more holistic approach, sort of preventative and proactive rather than reactive. How is that going to help people who are in more underserved communities?
So, that's part about the model of the education. But to respond to that, you are correct. It's much more comprehensive in the sense of a holistic approach to the patient in front of you. And we think that that's part of what's becoming more and more attractive to students. That's what's happening in the healthcare environment around us. As you think about how the conversations are changing with the healthcare system itself, through the providers, through the policymakers, and much, much more of a focus on that. So we've been trying to grow that interest for over a century, and have finally started to see the uptake as we would have wanted it to be long ago. But part of the reason, your question about sort of that rural space, we use a different approach to training our students in their clinical education phase. So rather than concentrate them in a large academic research center, typically in a single part of a large city or a single city, we tend to spread them out into much larger areas across small, medium-sized communities, also learning in those big centers, but not as the emphasis, and even into rural settings, in order to try to instill into them that the bulk of healthcare happens outside of those academic health centers. It happens in communities across America, more than 5,000 hospitals where care is otherwise delivered. We want them to be prepared for that setting. We want them to be comfortable in that setting and even find it desirable. One of the ways to get people to have an interest to go there is to make sure that they spend adequate time training there and getting to know the people and the setting involved.
It's always good to get people in the setting that they're going to be working in. Doctor, thanks so much for the time and the perspective. Dr. Robert Kane, President and CEO of the American Association of Colleges of Osteopathic Medicine. The picket signs are coming down today in the West Contra Costa Unified School District. The four-day teacher strike has ended. KCBS's Matt Bigler is at El Cerrito High with the latest.
A tentative agreement was reached early this morning between the United Teachers of Richmond and the school district, successfully ending the four-day walkout. The deal, which still requires ratification, reportedly includes an 8% pay raise over 2 years and significant improvements to health care benefits. All this after a 12-hour negotiating session, 10 months of bargaining, and the four-day strike. Brett Buchanan is a history teacher at El Cerrito High.
The strike was kind of a last thing we wanted to do. We didn't want to go on strike, but we wanted to be on par with basically all the other districts in the area. So
this does not mean that classes will resume today. All students are scheduled to return to their classrooms tomorrow. School leaders are urging all families to send students back for a full day of instruction on Thursday. At El Cerrito High School, Matt Bigler, KCBS.
As the Winter Olympics approach, there's a push to keep more Bay Area ice rinks open for the youngest athletes who could someday play in those games, and for the rest of us who just like to give it our best shot. Here's KCBS's Megan Goldsby.
For those hoping to one day skate for gold, daily practice can also mean hours and hours in traffic if rinks near their home close, says Bay Area coach Laura Lipetsky.
We definitely have a lack of ice rinks in the Bay Area. We have Redwood City that recently closed and Belmont Iceland that closed.
It's why the Silicon Valley Ice Skating Association holds its annual fundraiser Gala de Oro, which takes place tomorrow night in San Mateo, says its CEO and president Sarah Feldman.
A lot of real estate has competition for other uses, and so our organization works with cities and local community to really encourage longer-term solutions to keeping ice skating a part of our community. For example, having nonprofit status or particular zoning.
Megan Goldsby, KCBS.
Subscribe to the All Local wherever you get your podcasts and stream us on your smart speaker 24/7 by saying play KCBS Radio.